Hello and welcome to Balancing the Act. Today I am with Abhishek Mandebot. He's an independent journalist. He contributes to publications like Microsoft, GQ, The Washington Post, and many more. So today I am going to speak to him and learn about his experiences and what he does in his free time. So thank you first for taking the time out, Abhishek, and coming on Balancing the Act. This travel podcast is obliged to have you here. And to our listeners, Abhishek can give us a lot of insight. So just stick with us. Yeah.
Thanks for inviting me. I'm happy to be here. It's great to finally see you. I think we've interacted a few times, maybe over email, in your past life as a publicist, in my past life as a digital editor at GQ. So it's good to finally sort of put a face to the emails.
Great, Abhishek. So please tell us a little about, you spoke about our past. Tell me a little about your past, how you got to being this editor at GQ. This is a journey. So we start with, people understanding you better, and then we'll definitely dive into your story.
So I've been a journalist now pretty much from 2005, which was my first job after I finished my master's in English. And I always wanted to be a journalist. But I made the switch from print to digital fairly early. So around 2008 or so was when I sort of made my first switch to digital, what was then called web journalism. So we were doing that with Network 18. And then I think I joined Rediff, which was my longest stint. Again, Rediff is the oldest news and features website in the country, as you all know. So I was there for a long time. Then I sort of took up a role as travel editor at a website called India.com. And then I sort of switched to GQ, which, it looked like it was a natural progression from where I had started to that particular point. Since then, I have moved on from that role, freelance editor at GQ. I write for Washington Post. I'm a contributor I'm a columnist at Money Control. So yeah, and I do a lot of work for tech companies like Microsoft, Infosys, etc. So that's really it.
That's so much you do, yeah. So let's see our deep dive rather. I've been following you on Instagram. I've seen your post about Kashmir. So really interested in, understanding the small nitty-gritties of what goes into Kashmir. So the first question, whenever we're going to Kashmir or thinking about Kashmir, is always a safety angle. Is it safe to go there?
Yeah, the short answer is yes, it is. I think especially in the last sort of 1 week, which was the time that I was there, Diwali, thousands of tourists that have come down to Kashmir. It's a testimony to the fact of how safe it is to travel right now. Of course, there are incidents. While we were there, there were a few incidents that had happened. Obviously, you have to be careful. But I think overall, I would say that typical tourist areas are fairly safe, despite the few stray incidents that do happen. But they do happen. It's not like you're not... there is absolutely nothing. Everything is safe. No, that's not the case.
When I think of Kashmir, like I haven't been to Kashmir ever. And when I think of it, I think of mountains, slopes, valleys, different kind of things. So how breathtaking are these views? Because I've seen pictures, not only you, anyone who goes to Kashmir and clicks photos, I'm like, this is some place that you need to go to. So any spot that you like, this is it. This is what I was missing in Bombay. You're missing a lot.
I think that feeling hits you pretty much when you start descending, when your aircraft starts descending onto Srinagar, into Srinagar airport. You're sort of met with these stunning, majestic mountains and valleys. And it's amazing. It's an early glimpse of what you're about to see in Kashmir if you travel. And that sort of stays throughout the trip. If you choose to go to even the most typical tourist spots, which is Pehlgam, Gulmarg, Sonmarg, which unfortunately we couldn't make it. But even if you go to some of these typical tourist spots, you will see that everything you've seen in Instagram stories, Instagram posts, etc. And I think that's true. One sort of thing that what I was very surprised with, I almost skipped Betab Valley, which is near Pehlgam, but quite by chance I incidentally happened to go there. I was really stunned by how beautiful it was. Typically I would skip anything that Bollywood has touched. And indeed, Betab Valley is sort of gets its name from the Sunny Deol movie, Betab. But I was really, really stunned by how beautiful it was. And of course, just every single place that I went to was stunning.
So anything that you feel could be the postcard picture of Kashmir, what would it be?
Either Betab Valley, which is really stunning. The other place which I definitely like was Baisaran, which is the first sort of the typical tourist thing that you do is you sort of go from Pehlgam on a pony ride, you go up to Baisaran, which is call the mini Switzerland of India. But I mean, yeah, I mean, it is whatever it is. But the thing is that I think it's great if you go a little beyond Baisaran, you'll see the village. Yeah, so you have these, and you go everywhere, you have these small sort of houses which are abandoned right now because it's winter now. Winter is setting in. Technically, it's not winter, it's autumn, but it's already winter setting in. You've had the first snow. Gulmarg has had its first snow. Pahalgam has had its first snow. Sonmarg has had its first snow. But as winter sets in, these houses which are abandoned belong to the nomadic sort of herdsmen, you know, tribes that sort of take care of sheep and breed sheep and stuff like that. And they're abandoned for the entire duration of the winter. So you could sort of just go in and see how they live. And it's quite stunning. It's very simple, it's very basic. And you just sort of open the door and you're really just, you know, in heaven. It might be a very, very basic home with absolutely no running water, no electricity, nothing. You step out and you're, you know, in heaven. The sort of contrast of that was quite something, you know, because we pay thousands of rupees to, you know, get these views. What people
could do
over there could do is well, not could do, but I think really it's just this very, very basic. I mean, these are people who are nomads who are living in these houses, living a very, very, very tough life. They don't have a single sort of fixed place from where they can live or operate out of. But when they do, you have this views. I mean, it's quite interesting. It's a difficult life, yes, of course, but it is what it is, right?
But I mean, a rewarding one, I feel. So let's go to the touristy things you did there. In terms of, did you go alone? Did you go with someone? And how was it like? Was it like a planned trip? Were you like, subah utke, okay, this is what I want to do today? Or you were like, you know, I'm here for 20 days. I can do whatever I want to do.
So here's the thing. I can't do unplanned trips. I did that once and I sort of regretted it. But I usually try and go with, find a local. By local, I mean, if I were to travel to Hyderabad, which is what I'm doing next, I will reach out to somebody who I know is sort of plugged into the cultural scene, plugged into the local history and stuff like that, food. And then I sort of, you know, spend some time with that person. Thankfully, we are living in a time where a lot of these people exist. I did a similar sort of series, which is for Washington Post, which was a local's guide to Bombay, to Mumbai. And so I think I sort of realized that it makes sense to team up with these people, to whether it's a journalist who's doing heritage walk, whether it's a travel company that's partnering with locals, you sort of, you know, work with them because they are clued into what to do and what not to do in wherever you go. In Kashmir, it was a little difficult because to find somebody who can show you the place from a very specific lens, the cultural lens, providing you context to what you're doing. If you're having a wazwan, which is a meal, Kashmiri meal, what does it mean? What does it entail? To give you the context to that, I think that's a little difficult to find. So I did find somebody who runs this company called Kashmir Caravans. He invited me to his nephew's wedding and I had wazwan over there and it was really nice. He does some interesting, his name is Muzaffar Andrabi. He does some interesting sort of walks in Srinagar. But more than that, I think what I did was that before I set out, I was doing some research about how to spend the first sort of week, which was the time that I was by myself. And eventually my friends and my wife joined me in Srinagar. So I reached out and I found this these guys called Eka Experiences. It's run by this guy called Abhirup Paul. Now, Abhirup runs his company and he partners with the locals all around the country. He does sort of treks in Sikkim, he does treks in Kashmir. So I told him that, listen, boss, I won't do a trek because, you know, I'm not exactly fit. But how about you sort of curate something for me that I can do over the next sort of over a period of 1 week or 5 days or 6 days or whatever. And he did. So it was a mix of hiking and some sort of road journeys that we took for a few days. And then he sort of arranged accommodation in local hotels. So that sort of turned out to be very, very good because that way I didn't just manage to sort of actually do a little bit of hiking. Trekking is an advanced skill which I yet to possess. But yeah, I did some, I hiked in the snow, I was, and I realized I was there was only that much I could do. But yeah, I mean, I think we sort of went out and we, in the next following 2 days, we did a lot of car journeys. I stayed over in a place called Aru, which is about 14 kilometers away from Pahalgam. And I spent the night there and I woke up to these amazing sort of views, which I was not used to. But yeah, I think that sort of mix, which Ika experiences sort of curated for me was very good. Just to be clear that this is not a paid promotion. These were people that I sort of researched and sort of paid. Yeah, and I paid them for their services, which is, I think, like a fair thing to do, because when you're partnering with a local, I think you should do that. So yeah, I think that was really cool. So yeah, I mean, Eka was very good. I was introduced through Eka to this guy called Mehraj, a very interesting character. He's a guide, really nice guy. He was with me throughout the journey. And as I discovered in the later part of the trip, when things sort of went south on a couple of occasions, all I had to do was sort of reach out to him over the phone, and he would be there, you know, to help us out.
When you tell us about the hospitality bit when you were at the wedding, I really want to know about how the hospitality is in Kashmir. I'm sure it must be fun, but if you have to describe it in some words, how was it like enjoying the Vazban? Because I've done a podcast about Kashmir previously in the last season, and he mentioned the Vazban too. So does everybody who goes to Kashmir get to eat the Vazban?
Yeah, so Vazban is basically like a meal, right? So you have different dishes in it. A typical wedding feast, yeah, will have like about a dozen different types of meats only. Kashmiris are very, very big on meat. So you'll have Rogan Gosh, you'll have like a Goshtaba, you'll have ribs, and you'll have like, it's amazing how much meat they can eat. And they're very, very heavy eaters. But I think more than the wedding, which is where I had a very good meal, I think when you talk about hospitality, I think it's the overall sort of experience, which is very unique. I think we're so used to sort of seeing the Rajasthani sort of hospitality, you know, this whole thing of Padharo Mare Des. So, you know, that I mean, I think that's cool. I love Rajasthan. I've traveled extensively in Rajasthan, and they're great hosts. But I would probably say that Kashmiris rival their hospitality in that they are also very, very polite, and they're very warm. They're at least the ones that I came across. They'll make sure that you're taken care of, as Mehraj did. I mean, there was no reason why Mehraj should have sort of helped us out a couple of times when we were in a fix, because, you know, my time with him was done. Whatever I had paid for his services, he had delivered. But he was there. He was a phone call away at all times.
Any offbeat adventures that you took? You mentioned a good hike that you took, but you didn't tell us a little more about the hike.
So I don't think the hike is so much of an experience, really. I mean, because it was, I just sort of went up to Baisaran Valley, and I realized it was, I was walking in like about 3 feet of snow. So I couldn't really do much. But I think more than the hike, I think there was a bunch of places that we kind of did in the car, which were really interesting. Things that places that are there on, if you Google, you'll see those places in some itinerary here and there. But it's interesting. Like, for instance, there's a place called Muttons, which has a Sen temple, which is in ruins. The ruins of a beautiful Sen temple, rather, which is really cool. Achubal has a beautiful garden. There's Daksum, which has beautiful meadows. You know, and along the way, we sort of stopped and took some pictures in villages like Kulgam, Kudwani. There's also Verinag, which is a place which also has a garden. But at the end of the garden is a massive spring. And that's the spring which is one of the big sources of the river Jhelum. So yeah, those are sort of few interesting places. Again, these are all frequented by locals. I did not see a lot of outsiders over there. I'm sure people do come. I had gone there towards the end of the season, which is end of October, which is now the season is also sort of drawing to an end. Winter is about to set in properly in the next sort of fortnight or so, and it'll all be closed. But yeah, I think these sort of few offbeat places were so quote-unquote offbeat places, if you can call them. But yes, definitely beyond the Pehlgam, Sonmarg, Srinagar, Gulmarg type situations. So yeah, these are like really cool.
So tea is very big, right? Or tea is famous in Kashmir. You have the kawa and stuff like that, right? So did you indulge in any butter chai or something like that? What was your experience with tea in Kashmir?
Yeah, I mean, I did do a lot of kawa. I love drinking chai generally in life, as my wife would tell you. But I think kawa was really nice. I hadn't had kawa. I might have had it like maybe a couple of times here and there when I went to meet someone, but I mean, not really in that sense. Yeah, so it was really, I mean, yes, it's nice. I don't know what else to say except for the fact that it's very interesting. It's got a very interesting flavor. So
did you get a lot of it home? Or?
As a matter of fact, I did, yes. I did, as a matter of fact, but it was more for my friend who's obsessed with kawa. So she was the one who was like, Monali, she's obsessed with kava. She's like, you know, you have to drink kava. I said, yes, I will. And I did. But at some
chai?
Point, I called her back. No, not really. I'm not a very big fan of butter chai. But I think it's what happens is that the moment you have kava or you have chai or whatever it is, you know, invariably when you start talking to people, as is wont generally anywhere in India, they'll say, chai pioge. And you say, yes, of course, because, you know, that's how you sort of open a conversation. And I think that's great, because that's always a good icebreaker, you know, a cup of tea, no matter where you go in India.
One last question to you. Who was your favorite person on this trip, on this whole journey of you coming? Who was your favorite person?
I think you should have guessed it, but Mehraj is his name. He is a guide. He organizes treks. He works with Abhirup of Eka Experiences. He's an incredibly decent guy, the kind of person you can bank upon. As we did, as I did, and I think it would be him. And he was there, went beyond his sort of, you know, call of duty, so to say, was there with me throughout the trip and beyond. We stayed in touch, of course. And yeah, I think I had come to sort of rely on him a lot, not just because he was resourceful, but also because he was generally a nice person. And I think that counts for something, because you do meet a lot of resourceful people when you're traveling, guides, and, you know, they always have their own hustle. So yeah, it would probably be Mehraj for sure. And he works for Eka Experience.
So I'm collecting life lessons from different people and all walks of life. So your life lesson, your take on life or on this journey that you've had?
I think listen would be it, right? I mean, we end up talking so much that we forget to listen. And that was something that I was hoping to do in this trip. I hope I did in this trip as well, which was listen. The more you listen, the more you learn. The more you learn, the more sensitive, the more empathetic you get. And yeah, so that's really it.
So thank you so much. Thank you for being on Balancing the Act. And you will see this soon. And please stay tuned.
Thank you so much. Great talking to you together.
Feel free to follow, like, and share. Thank you for your time. And as always, stay safe.